You're listening to the Actionable Content Marketing Podcast, powered by CoSchedule, the number one marketing calendar for everything you need organized.
Does your content performance have peaks and valleys? And wouldn't it be nice to see your content performance just go up and to the right super consistently? You can do it. And it's as simple as setting standards your content must meet before you hit that publish button. Hey, I'm Nathan from CoSchedule. Today, I'm chatting with Jeff Goines. You probably know Jeff from his national best-selling book, The Art of Work. Or maybe you know him from his amazing content he publishes at Goines Writer. And you know what? The content he publishes on his blog is becoming even more amazing week after week. And it's all because of the framework he's sharing with you in today's episode of the Actionable Content Marketing Podcast. You're about to learn how to publish even more effective content. Let's listen to Jeff's advice on content scorecards. Hey, Jeff, thanks a lot for being on the podcast.
Hey, Nathan. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and we're glad to have you. Jeff, so to kick this off, I was wondering if you could give me the lowdown on Goines Writer and what you do there.
Goineswriter.com is a blog that I started about 5 years ago, I think. And I started it after this conversation I had with a friend of mine. I was probably 28 years old working for a nonprofit. I was a marketing director there. And I don't know, like a lot of people in their late 20s, was feeling a little discontented and wondering if there was more to life. I wasn't unhappy. I wasn't thrilled with where I was. I was just going, is there more that I have to offer? And I describe it as an itch that I couldn't scratch, you know, and you've got like an itch on your back and you can't find it. And it sort of felt like that. I felt like there was something that I was missing and I wasn't quite sure what it was. And so I signed up for this professional coaching group, kind of like, you know, a paid mastermind or something, I think we'd call it today. And probably the second session there, we met every other month for about a year. One of the other students in the program said, "Hey, what's your dream?" And I said, "I don't know. I don't know if I have a dream. I've got a job. Do I need a dream?" And you know, I was really disillusioned with the whole dreaming thing. I had a lot of friends who were kind of jumping from one dream to the next, not really experiencing any success, and just kind of flaking out. And I had a wife and I had a full-time job and I thought of myself as moderately responsible. And so I was like, I don't need a dream. And so he said, "Oh, well, I would have thought that your dream was to be a writer." And I said, I guess I'd like to be a writer someday. And he looked at me and he said, "Jeff, you don't have to want to be a writer. You are a writer. You just need to write." And I barely knew this guy, so it's very interesting that he was saying these. He was talking as if he knew me and knew what I wanted. He knew that I was sort of writing on the side, that I'd started and stopped a few different blogs at different times. And so it was a really powerful experience. But when he said that, he said, "Well, you are a writer. You just need to write." I was like, "Okay, I'm going to do that." And so I started this blog, goineswriter.com, and it became the place where I basically shared my process of how I was going to start experimenting with a daily writing habit. So I wrote on that blog for a year, every single day, about 500 to 1,000 words. And I did that in 2011. And by the end of that year, I had 10,000 email subscribers and people were telling me, like, "You can monetize this and turn this into a business and publish books." And I was like, "Oh, really?" And so, I was a marketing director. I understood online marketing, but this whole, you know, being sort of an information marketer, or, you know, teaching people how to do stuff online, even being an online entrepreneur, this was a whole new world to me. And so, you know, I started this online business basically writing books and teaching writers and creatives how to use their crafts to succeed online through things like online marketing, business, and so forth. And, you know, it took off and turned into this million-dollar business that I continue to run, and I continue to write and publish books, you know, around things that interest me, and my blog is still the place where I experiment with ideas, share a lot about the craft of writing, talk about blogging, and just the problems and challenges facing creatives, especially writers today.
And I would say that that advice has paid off a lot. I mean, your blog is amazing, amazing, full of tips, inspirational for people like me and for writers all over the place.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. One of the things that you do a lot is work on improving, and some of your content that I've read just really helps me improve every time that I read it. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about improvement and specifically about that idea of a content scorecard that you have to improve your content. So I was just wondering, could you give me an overview of what your content scorecard is?
Yeah, well, this is a very simple tool, and it was actually created by my team member, Kyle. And the brief story behind this, because apparently I can't answer a question without telling a story, so you know, bear with me, Nathan.
That's good, though.
It's not good for my wife. My wife is like, uh-huh. I tell her a story, and she's like, what is the point of this thing? And I'm like, hang on, wait for it. You know, it's coming. But over the years, I think I've learned to tell slightly better stories. This was a tool that we accidentally created that has been transformational for my blog, for the business. I'm actually going to an Airbnb tomorrow to film a course around this thing that we've created. So it's been a very helpful tool. I've started sharing it with other bloggers, writers, online marketers, and they found it really effective as well. So it's fun to be able to share this with you. A while ago, earlier this year, we were trying to grow the team. I was writing a book. I thought I would write a book in 3 months. My agent was like, you should probably take like 6 months to write this book. I was like, fine, I'll take 6 months, because my wife had a baby, you know, in the middle of that. And I was just like, I'll start the book in January. My wife will have our kid in February. I'll be done in March. And he's like, maybe, maybe not. So I was like, all right, fine, 6 months. Anyway, 11 months later, I turned the book in. So all year I was writing this book. And at the same time, we're trying to build the team for the business. And something that's been really hard for me is to figure out what to do with content, because basically I create all the content. I write all the a lot of the email copy, all the articles, you know, all of the stuff that has my name on it, I actually write. And for a season, I tried to outsource that. And the quality of content, the reader engagement, tanked, you know. And what I was doing was like, I'd like come up with a rough piece of content, then like send it to an editor. And it was really hard. And I actually had a conversation with Seth Godin. I got on the phone with him and I said, you know, you've built these companies and you've sold them, but you've never done this with like your blog. You never really scaled that. But you occasionally do events and books and projects. So, you know, why is that? And he said, well, I've never scaled my content because my content is me and you can't outsource your voice. And that really resonated with me. I don't know that that's true for, you know, an organization necessarily. I mean, I used to run a team of 10 writers for a nonprofit, and we had lots of different writers who were all creating content within this organizational voice. But I think it's especially challenging and potentially problematic for personal brands. And if you put your name on something, you know, I'm not saying that like it's gospel that like you have to write every word that you put your name on it, you know, on, but like I'd be very careful to just completely outsource your voice. And that was just something that I realized didn't work for me. So really, our content was based on my subjective whims, on what I thought was good or bad. And that's fine when you're just kind of a solopreneur or, you know, an individual blogger, I guess. But I was building this team and there were more moving parts and we were collaborating with folks. And I would write a blog post and it would do well. And then I'd write a blog post and it wouldn't do as well. And I didn't really know why. I was like, well, I guess, you know, the muse, you know, was struck me, you know, in a certain way that day and it didn't, you know, the other day. And so what we did as a team is we kind of went through a lot of these old blog posts and looked at the ones that did extraordinarily well. You know, we were looking at 50% you know, like a 1.5 times bump of our average daily traffic, you know, trending at least 50% above, double or triple average comments. We just looked at all of our content that was not just good, but extraordinary in terms of performance. And we were evaluating that based on social shares, comments, and traffic to the actual page visits. And Kyle identified these four check marks, basically. And so the scorecard is just a series of four questions. And I'll share with you some interesting results when we started experimenting with that in a second. But the scorecard is really simple. You get a point for each of these things. And if you get all 4 points, you get a perfect score. And the idea is sort of like a GPA. We're going for a 4.0. We're going for not perfect content, but content that if it satisfies all four of these, it's done. And if it doesn't, you know, maybe we don't ship it. And so we started this out just sort of as a tool, and we started publishing three out of fours and four out of fours and two out of fours, and just looked at how they perform differently. The 4 points are this. You get 1 point if the content is well written. Now, what that means really is that it meets the standards in our internal style guide. And so we have things in our internal style guide like, you know, don't use too many adverbs. Don't use the word I too much. If you're saying I did this, I did this, I did this. It's okay to use once in a while, but it gets kind of repetitive and it's exhausting to the reader. And then other style things like, you know, we keep our paragraphs between 3 and 4 lines just because, you know, as you probably know, Nathan, people are, you know, reading huge giant paragraphs online with backlit screens. It's exhausting for the eyes versus looking at little chunks of text and, you know, scanning and whatnot. So all those things kind of contribute to 1 point, which is the content is well written, meaning we are meeting our internal standards in terms of a style guide, which used to just be in my head, and I had to kind of write that out and collaborate with the team. And they said, is this what you mean when you mean this is good? And I was like, Yeah, it is. So that's 1 point. Another point is that you promise something. So one of the things we realized when we were analyzing all these articles is the best content was not necessarily just a good story or a well-written piece of prose, but it was the fact that it made a clear, compelling promise. So there was something that was in it for the reader. And so you get a point for making a promise. This is going to help you do X, Y, or Z. That can happen in the headline, in the lead. It's going to happen early on in the article. And then, so that's 1 point, is there's an actual promise of something that the reader's going to get out of it. Then there's another point for keeping the promise. So lots of articles make promises that don't necessarily, that you don't necessarily deliver on. And this is especially the case in online marketing, where you go 13 wacky reasons for how to make a living online, and they give you 4 and then, you know, charge you for the other 9 or whatever. And that's not really keeping a promise. And so trust with our readers is really important. And so you get a 3rd point for keeping the promise. And then lastly, the content wows the reader with value, leading them to think, I can't believe this was free. In other words, it's so useful, it's so practical, it's so helpful that somebody would have paid for it. And so, you know, I basically that boils down to 4 questions. Do you open with a promise? Do you close with actually delivering on that promise? Are you following our internal style guide? And is there some sort of is there an extraordinary amount of value in the article itself that leaves people going, I actually would have paid for this? And so if you get all 4 of those, you have a perfect score. Doesn't mean the article is perfect. Doesn't mean that you can't edit it and make it better. But it does mean that it's done and it's something that we can ship. And like I said, we experimented with shipping 2s and 3s and 4s just to see how they performed. And the results were actually pretty extraordinary.
There's more where that came from. But first, I want to share an exclusive offer with you. Get 30 free days of CoSchedule when you sign up at coschedule.com/actionable. You'll organize every marketing project in one beautiful drag and drop editorial calendar. Okay, let's learn more about those content scorecards with Jeff.
Jeff, I'm sure that as you got started, you may have hit some snakes here and there. You had kind of mentioned like hitting twos and threes. What was some of the biggest challenges you faced when implementing your scorecard?
Well, here's the thing. Like, this was not my idea. I just wanted some sort of consistent way of creating effective content. I believe that there's no such thing as good writing. There's only effective writing, you know. So you may love J.K. Rowling and I may think, oh, she's a hack, and I might be totally into Ernest Hemingway and you might be like rolling your eyes going, I don't even get it or whatever. And so the point is, it's not a writer's job. It's not a marketer's job. It's not a blogger's job to please everyone. But it is your job to please someone. And that someone is your reader. And so the best content, the best writing is effective for its intended reader. Nobody wants to read something that feels like mass marketing, right? Like nobody wants to read something that like looks like a billboard, you know, because that feels like it's for everyone. And if it feels like it's for everyone, then it's basically for no one. I mean, one of the reasons I love Seth Godin so much is because he writes stuff that references things that he wrote 5 or 10 years ago. And I've been reading him for 10 years. And so I remember that and I get the joke, right? I'm in on the secret. And that's a risk, right? If he were constantly trying to get new readers and acquire new customers, then he wouldn't be going as deep with his tribe as he goes. And he would probably get more readers and acquire more customers, but there wouldn't be the depth of trust that there is with him. Seth recently published a book that he sold for $150 a copy. I bought two of them because I'm a fan. I get the joke. I'm in on the secret. And that's because he is very effective at communicating a specific message to his particular audience. And he's okay with not reaching everyone. And so that's what effective writing does well. And when we put the scorecard together, we realize like that's what we're aspiring to do, is be more effective with our intended readership. Yes, we want to grow. But more than anything, we want to deepen the level of trust that we have with the people who are listening to us. If we didn't, I'd go write like, you know, stuff about fashion or celebrities or whatever. Like if I just wanted to reach the most amount of people, and that's obviously not what I want to do. So yeah, did we hit snags? Totally. I mean, I would write an article and I would go, guys, this is really good. And, you know, I think this is often the case with like a visionary leader. You go, hey, yeah, that sounds great. We should have a scorecard or whatever. And then like you say yes to the rules, and then like 20 minutes later, you know, you want to break the rules. I mean, that's often the case for me as a visionary entrepreneur. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. Now this doesn't apply to me, does it? Anyway, so I was sort of stubborn about it, right? And so like I said, we published twos and threes, not because like we were being super experimental, but because I was like, this is good, let's publish it. And at the same time, we started measuring what percentage of readers were completing our articles. So we published twos and we published threes. And I published a three one time and I thought it was great. I mean, this was a longer article. I was experimenting with longer form stuff, moving from 500 word articles to 1500 word articles. And it was a lot of prose, a lot of story, a lot of narrative. And I thought it was really good, really interesting. And 30% of the readers finished the entire article. The average person read about 30% of the article. They didn't finish it. And, you know, that was disappointing. And, you know, 3 out of 4 ain't bad, but that's like, you know, I mean, you're doing straight, you know, C's. And I've always been kind of competitive. And so I was like, well, I kind of want straight A's. And so I started paying attention to the scorecard and I said, okay, I'll try writing a 4. And really what it was, Nathan, it was that last one that I mentioned. It was this, you know, seemingly simple phrase: the content wows the reader with value, leading them to think, I can't believe this was free. You know, there's something actionable in it that they can take and apply to their own life, their own, you know, writing career, which is often the case with our readers. So I wrote a great article, and then I went back over and I just like, I spent probably another 2 hours just trying to make sure that it was packed with value. And then we shipped that. And 80%, that was the average completion rate, was 80%. So the difference between a 3 out of 4 for us and a 4 out of 4 is, you know, a 50, you know, like 50% more of the article is read. So yeah, I mean, a 3 gets us 30% of the article being read, a 4 gets us 80%. And so I said, okay, we're not going to publish anything but a 4 anymore, 4 out of 4. And it's been, it's changed the game for us. I mean, and after we instituted that, we started basically hitting home runs almost every time with one new blog post every single week. And instead of it being a crapshoot, instead of it being, you know, gosh, we'll see how this does, right? Throw it against the wall and see what sticks. It became this consistent way to publish content that was effective. And like I said, I mean, you know, I've shared it with friends and other people in who do online marketing, and it's been very helpful for them. Revolutionary. We're turning it into a product because I think that there's something really powerful here. And I think the point is not that you should steal my scorecard, although you're welcome to do it. The point is that you should have some objective way of measuring your creative output. And I am such a creative. I'm such an artist that this – I dragged my feet through this whole thing. But the bottom line is more than just wanting to create cool stuff, I want my – creations, my words, my writing, my art to impact people. And so if I can, you know that the time I'm spending creating a blog post is going to impact somebody because I'm going to ask these four questions, which aren't that difficult, you know, to answer, then that's what I want to do versus, you know, work on something for hours upon hours and throw it out on the internet and hope somebody cares about it.
Yeah, and I think the results of your content scorecard really speak for themselves. Going from 30% read to 80% read is definitely effective for your niche audience. So I think it's just really good advice.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I was skeptical. I'm not way into measuring everything. But really, it's just like I write an article and then I ask myself these four questions. And the team holds me accountable now. And they go, hey, this doesn't meet our standards that you agreed upon. And do you want this to be 30% read or 80% read? By the way, that number is, as we get to a 4, we're constantly honing and tweaking and making it better and better. And so every week we're increasing that by about a percentage point. We're up to about 85% now. And so there's still room to master this and grow and get better and better, but it's just a standard that we've decided to live by. And it's been really fun, and it's been really cool to see that consistently, you know, generate the kind of results that, you know, that I'm certainly, pleased with, and I hope it helps other people as well.
Yeah. And speaking of helping other people, your content scorecard is really specific to creating successful content for your own following at Goins Writer. Right. I'm wondering if you might have some advice for how can a marketer create a scorecard like this for their own content?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, like I said, you can steal this, and I think that there's some universal stuff here. As I mentioned, I think that effective writing is a better term than good writing. And so the question that you should ask, you know, say you're working with a team of copywriters, or you're writing, you know, some email copy or a newsletter or a blog post for a client, you know, you can ask yourself these same questions. Is there some sort of promise I'm making in this article? And then am I delivering on that promise? Am I writing within the accepted style and voice of the blog, of the newsletter, of the organization, whatever it might be? And am I creating actionable content that is going to actually help people achieve the outcome that I promised them? So I think that this is, I mean, there's some universality here. I think that effective writing is not about being cool or, you know, full of a bunch of sizzle. It's simply about saying you're going to do something, doing it well, and then leaving the reader with something that they can go do. And I think almost all nonfiction writing it needs to do this. There needs to be some sort of argument. And then you need to actually effectively make that argument. And you need to say what you're going to say in a way that doesn't, you know, make you sound ignorant. And again, if that's whatever your style guide is, that's whatever the norms of your industry or genre may be. And then again, leave the reader thinking, I can't believe this was free. So, you know, is that open to interpretation? You bet. Yeah. And interpret that however you want. But I think those questions are enough. Those four areas are enough to, you know, get you started. And honestly, I mean, go read not great blogs, and read, frankly, a lot of, you know, marketing blogs, you know, that aren't, a lot of them aren't doing this as well as they could be. And you'll see, I mean, you'll see them have two or three of these, but when you have four out of four content like this, it's almost always going viral or connecting well with the audience. And, I mean, that's just the power of communication. I don't know if you remember like taking communication class in like high school or whatever, Nathan, but, I did. And I remember it to this day that like, there was like a picture in the textbook and they talked about communication is there's a sender and a message and a receiver, and you haven't effectively communicated a message until the receiver says, okay, I received that, you know, like really like silly and almost like pedantic. But often as marketers, I think we overlook this, you know, we go, oh, well, you know, like the click-through rate was such and such, or the open rate was yada, yada. And it's not just about broadcasting stuff. It's about making sure that we are making a connection. And when you effectively communicate something, you're not just getting people to open it. You're not just tricking them into clicking a link because you know, like wrote a clever piece of copy. You're getting them to do stuff, measurable action. And when you do that, you're not going to go out of business. Your email list is going to grow and you're going to have people raving about you. And so, I mean, I think it's a higher standard for sure, but it's at the same time, it's something that we can all do if we, just take a little bit more time, to care for our audiences and the people that we're trying to reach.
Yeah, Jeff, I think that's awesome advice. I appreciate the stories. And I mean, this whole thing has been pretty actionable for me. So thanks for sharing everything today.
Great. Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad you appreciated the stories and hopefully the jokes as well. the mild voice cracks, that's bonus content for you.
You know what's fun about that conversation? Even before I talked to Jeff about his content scorecard, we implemented a similar idea at CoSchedule. When we looked at improving key qualities in our content, our results increased dramatically. So this is amazing advice, Jeff, and a nice reiteration that simple frameworks can make a major impact. If you'd like to learn more about content scorecards, stay tuned to Jeff's blog. You can also check out this episode's show notes and transcript at coschedule.com/podcast. And if you want to start organizing your content, I'd recommend trying CoSchedule. You get 30 free days when you sign up now at coschedule.com/actionable. You just heard from Jeff Goines, the author of four books, including the national bestseller, The Art of Work. Thanks for being on the podcast, Jeff. And thanks to all of my friends who listened in. You guys are awesome. I'm Nathan from CoSchedule, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Actionable Content Marketing Podcast from your friends at CoSchedule. For more actionable content, visit coschedule.com.